It is 6 minutes past the hour. Deborah Heart and Lung Center, typically, although we do move it occasionally, but typically, you know, it's the first Thursday of the month in the first half of the 9 o'clock hour when we're very, very fortunate because they have so many incredibly skillful doctors in such a range of disciplines, heart, lung, all these different, the sleep diagnostic aspect of Deborah Heart and Lung Center. They just do a fabulous job. And Dr. James Harrington is no exception. A vascular and endovascular surgeon who is board certified in both vascular and general surgery. Dr. Harrington earned his medical degree from the University of Medicine and Dentistry of New Jersey, UMDNJ, Medical School in Newark, New Jersey. After medical school, Dr. Harrington completed a residency in general surgery at Drexel University College of Medicine, Hahnemann University in Pennsylvania. He completed a fellowship in vascular surgery at Temple University Hospital in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Dr. Harrington's special interests include vascular and endovascular surgery, aortic aneurysms, peripheral vascular disease, lower extremity ulcers, and carotid disease. He has participated in a number of research projects and has conducted many presentations at regional vascular meetings. He's a fellow of the American College of Surgeons. He's board certified vascular surgery and general surgery, and as I referenced, his residency surgery, Drexel University College of Medicine, MCP, Hahnemann University, Pennsylvania. Special interest, vascular and endovascular surgery, peripheral vascular disease, aortic aneurysms, carotid disease, lower extremity ulcers, that's venous, diabetic, arterial, varicose veins, and wound care. And a reminder, the easiest way to navigate, because the website is so well done, is just go to demanddeborah.org, demanddeborah.org, and you'll see the request appointment hyperlink right there. You can't miss it, and Deborah Heart Lung Center is accepting new patients. Dr. Harrington, it is always an honor to present you, sir. Good morning.
Good morning, Harry.
Great to be with you, doctor. And everybody knows our topic, CVI, or in long form, chronic venous insufficiency. What is chronic venous insufficiency?
Well, thank you, Harry. It's a great honor and privilege to talk with you on your show today about a topic that's near and dear to my heart. As a vascular surgeon, it's chronic venous insufficiency. So when we talk about chronic venous insufficiency, what we're speaking about is swelling of the legs that is due to a venous pathology. So there are other etiologies that can cause leg swelling, such as heart failure, kidney disease, thyroid disease, an entity called lymphedema. And these can be other causes of swollen legs, but what we're speaking about specifically is when it's secondary to venous valvular malfunction. It's estimated that up to 2.5 million people in the United States can suffer from chronic venous insufficiency, and about 20% of those patients can go on to develop venous ulcerations or sores or wounds on their feet, which become quite difficult to treat. So chronic venous insufficiency and ulcers can affect the patient's quality of life, can impede your social and occupational activity. So it's an important topic.
Dr. Harrington, in terms of what it is, you just knocked it out of the park. What causes CVI?
So the main risk factors and causes of chronic venous insufficiency are hereditary and genetic factors. So it's always good to know what runs in the family, what mom and dad might have had, or what aunts and uncles had. And a lot of venous disease is hereditary. We also know that women are at greater risk than men for chronic venous insufficiency. With that, use of oral contraceptives in the long term has been shown to have some relationship to chronic venous insufficiency. Being chronically overweight or obese leads to a lot of excess swelling, just because of all the pressure you have pushing down on the legs leads to increased swelling. a prolonged sitting or a sedentary type lifestyle. So whatever type of occupation you might have, if you end up standing a long time or are sitting in a long time, you can end up with a greater risk of having swelling of the legs and vein malfunction. Any history of blood clots can lead to swelling in the legs, which is long term. And any history of cellulitis or skin infections can cause an inflammatory reaction, which then can cause a fibrosis, which can lead to chronic swelling, and that can also be a cause of chronic venous insufficiency. Swelling can lead to inflammation, which leads to more swelling, and then it's a cyclical flat path that begins that self-propagates, and you end up with more swelling. The entities that people are more familiar with vein disease are spider veins, or those little squiggly veins you can see underneath the skin, or actual varicose veins, which are dilated veins, which you can see underneath of the skin.
If someone, and someone did write to have me ask you, if you have some of those, I think some people look at them as like bursted blood vessels, or as you call them, these spider veins. They wanted to know, because they have some, they said, admittedly, I have some. They have some down by like their ankles area there, yeah, and a little bit above that. Is that, they want to know, is that necessarily bad news, or is that a part of aging?
Great question. So it's not necessarily bad news. It is part of aging. We see it as we get older. So it doesn't necessarily imply a terrible condition underlying. However, we do see the spider veins quite commonly, and they do develop there in the most dependent portion. Down by the ankle, it's quite common, just above the ankle. And really, they're just your normal little blood vessels that are your veins that are inside of the skin that just become dilated from having increased pressure. And so and generally the spider veins give you only some irritation such as itching or burning with prolonged standing. Occasionally you can have one that could bleed if you were to get a cut or sorry, to get inflamed enough that the skin would get thin enough to actually break and have a little bit of bleeding. But that's actually the minor thing that happens. Well, the most time we just see some basically some irritation, some itching and swelling. They can be managed both with anti-inflammatory medications, something as simple as over-the-counter ibuprofen, all the way up to we can get invasive, where we can actually inject the veins, a procedure called sclerotherapy, which is where we inject some medication into the veins and help get them to dissolve away, to get rid of the source of the inflammation.
Very important.
There is also a laser option. There's also a laser option that you can utilize to do that as well. So if you have a needle phobia or you aren't able to tolerate the needle sclerotherapy, there's a laser option which is less invasive, and we can basically zap those veins away.
Is that condition mostly, you mentioned there could be some itching, and you know, if it gets, you get cut right there, it could bleed and things like that. Is that mostly cosmetic, more so than something that would present with any type of thing that you'd have to deal with, unless, of course, you wanted to?
Right. So that's a great question, because a lot of it is cosmetic. People just don't like the way that they look. They don't really particularly have any symptoms from them. But the way the insurance company groups it together is they see them all to be cosmetic, even if you do have symptoms from them. So I do have patients who have, they're pretty symptomatic from those little veins, and we can treat them by sclerotherapy. However, when you consider something cosmetic, then you know, that usually means the insurance company doesn't pay for that procedure to happen, and it has to come out of pocket from the patient. So I think that we do see plenty of the spider veins which are symptomatic and do warrant treatment, and sclerotherapy works very well to resolve the problem.
We are going to take our one and only break that we take during Deborah Hart Lung Center Presents. We're going to go now, come back in just a little bit, and then we are uninterrupted until about 36 minutes past the hour. We're going to need it. We have a lot of ground to cover. It's a very important topic. We have just a phenomenal doctor, a wonderful man, a great guest, and just Deborah Hart Lung Center Presents never disappoints. Dr. James Harrington, vascular and endovascular surgeon, and the topic this half hour on Deborah Hart and Lung Center Presents, Dr. Harrington, is chronic venous insufficiency. You can make an appointment. Deborah is accepting new patients. Wonderful care, wonderful doctors. Demand deborah.org and just click on the request appointment, and all of it is right there at your ready reference from any digital device, handheld devices, your smartphones, laptops, iPads, desktops, you name it. demanddeborah.org. We'll be back with Dr. Harrington in just a few minutes. Stay with us. At 22 minutes past the hour, we've got a lot of ground to cover. Let's get right to it, Dr. Harrington. Deborah Heart and Lung Center presents Dr. James Harrington. He's fantastic vascular and endovascular surgeon. And the topic this half hour on Deborah Heart and Lung Center presents Dr. Harrington is chronic venous insufficiency. And let's get into it. I think you covered some of it, but I think it deserves to be a standalone question. Anyhow, did we talk everything you wanted to share about signs and symptoms of chronic venous insufficiency?
Sure, we'll talk a little bit more about the whole concept. So we get venous insufficiency when we have our veins and the valves in the veins no longer work appropriately. So valves in the veins are supposed to open to let the blood flow toward the heart and then close to prevent your blood from flowing backwards. When the valves stop working and they stop opposing correctly, the valves then prolapse and allow the blood to flow backwards down into the venous system. And then that leads to pooling of blood in the veins in your legs, and it leads to what we call venous hypertension inside of the veins. And with that, you get fluid that gets pushed out of your veins into your fatty tissues there in the lower legs, and that's where we start to get swelling. It also can lead to your red blood cells getting pushed out into the fatty tissues. And when they get resorbed, we get pigment that gets laid down. So we get a bronzing of the skin, and that's called a hyperpigmentation. And that's something that patients definitely notice when they start to see their skin get a little bit darker. When we talk about chronic venous insufficiency, it can be manifested into a myriad of signs and symptoms, such as leg heaviness, burning, swelling. We can see spider veins. We can see varicose veins. We can see skin discoloration and skin thickening. And the last stage is actually ulcers that are secondary to the venous swelling. So for us physicians, we use a classification system called the CAP. Classification system, which breaks it down into what we see when you come in, and it's a system that goes from grade 1 to 6. And grade 1 is basically you have little telangiectasias, to where, which are the spider veins, to the stage 2, which are varicose veins, various stages of varicose veins, and then stage 3, where we have swelling and swelling of the leg and the ankles that can be associated with the other previously mentioned varicose veins and spider veins. And then when we get up into the stage 4, we have skin damage from the chronic swelling, which is where you get the hyperpigmentation or discoloration and scarring of the skin and thickening of the skin. And then we move on to leg ulceration or wounds. So we can break people down into these different categories. And it gives us a good idea where patients are when they first come in and present. The difficulty we still have is it doesn't give us great prognostic information yet as far as which will respond best to different wounds. So we're constantly working on improving the outcomes for patients. So when we look at the legs, we see a lot of skin changes. So the skin change we see a lot is where we get thickening of the skin, and the medical term is lipodermatosclerosis, but it's basically a progressive fibrosis or scarring and hardening of the skin and tissue of the leg. And its most severe form, it gets quite pronounced, and it's more commonly known as elephantiasis, which is a term that many people may have heard of before. Ulcers are a big issue if you get chronic swelling and then you end up with venous ulcers because they're very difficult to heal. So folks that have chronic swelling can end up with little sores from minor trauma that can turn into big wounds. And also wounds can occur when too much fluid accumulates in the leg, So it's kind of, I explain it kind of like a growing a tomato can only handle so much water, but if you give it too much water too quickly, it'll actually burst and then it'll become tense and split. And the same thing with the skin, if too much fluid accumulates, it can actually pop open, and then we have a wound which becomes very difficult to heal because you get a chronic leakage of fluid through the wound.
Wow.
So they can be difficult to heal. So we want to try to control the swelling and modify our risk factors early in the process of leg swelling.
Which takes us right to, what are the risk factors?
So our risk factors, we went over a little bit before, is family history and hereditary factors. There's also a few conditions where we clot our blood more readily than others, called hypercoagulable states. They aren't that common, but if you end up having blood clots from that, you can get some chronic venous insufficiency. Women are a greater risk, as well as folks that have used oral contraceptives, overweight and morbid obesity, prolonged standing or sitting, basically a sedentary lifestyle. So you always hear us talk about and promote exercise and getting out and being active. It's really important to keep our bodies moving. Any history of blood clots that you might have ever had, they always damage the valves. When you get blood clots, the clots are inside the vein and they stick to the valves. And then when the blood clots resolve, the valves are no longer functioning and you get a lot of swelling after that. Some folks get recurrent infections. They don't think of it, but the different occupations that you may get all repeated cuts on your legs, you get different types of infections over time that leads to a scarring and a fibrosis, and especially of the lymphatic system, and leads to chronic swelling. Smoking is a risk factor. We always talk about how bad smoking is for you, so that certainly is a modifiable risk factor you can work on. And a more rare cause is where we get into what we call compression of the pelvic veins. So that's your veins up in your pelvis can be compressed by lymph nodes, or rarely by masses such as prostate masses, but we don't see it that often. We're getting into the more esoterical things down the line, but the more common causes are what we just went over.
You're listening to Dr. James Harrington from Deborah Heart Lung Center, a vascular and endovascular surgeon. The topic this half hour on Deborah Heart Lung Center presents, Dr. James Harrington, is chronic venous insufficiency. Can chronic venous insufficiency lead ultimately to deep vein thrombosis?
It's a good question. People are always worried about blood clots. Having chronic venous insufficiency in itself does not give you an increased risk of a blood clot. However, if you have a lot of swelling and you're just not getting out and about, and you have a lot of sedentary, you're in a prolonged laying or sitting position, then you can get a blood clot from that. So we do see a little bit higher incidence of blood clots in folks with chronic venous insufficiency, and a lot of it's due to the decreased mobility that people have. So when you have a big swollen leg, it's hard to get out and about and do your daily activities, and especially exercise. So
this might sound like a dumb question, but I'm just a layperson, so I can ask dumb questions. If you have varicose veins, by definition, Dr. Harrington, is that chronic venous insufficiency, or could you have varicose veins and it not be that?
Yeah, so it is a chronic venous insufficiency, and it falls into our category of a C2, which is on the more minor end. So people can have varicose veins and they cause no symptoms at all. They're just dilated in there, or the veins can give you some heaviness and tenderness and burning. So when we talk about varicose veins, we want to break it down into, are you symptomatic from the veins, or are they just there? So if you're asymptomatic, meaning they don't bother you at all, you just happen to have some dilated veins, you don't necessarily have to have any treatment for them. So we're looking to treat the symptomatic patients.
All right, so I feel like I'm definitely going to be Captain Obvious here, but I'm going to ask the question to give you the opportunity to talk about it, because I think if I say, how is CVI diagnosed, seems to me from what I've learned from you today, Dr. Harrington, hey, there's the spider veins. Hey, there's the varicose veins. Hey, there's the swelling. It almost, visual inspection almost seems like the diagnosis, isn't it?
Correct. So the first step in diagnosis really is a good history and physical exam. So with a good history, you can uncover a lot of the patient's risk factors and why they may have chronic swelling, especially with their, well, I keep going back to what mom and dad had or what runs in the family. We carefully listen to the patient's symptoms, and then you do a thorough physical exam, and you pretty much know what's happening just by looking at their legs and listening to their story. As far as radiology studies, the most common study that we might get would be just an ultrasound, a venous duplex ultrasound. So it's a non-invasive procedure. So it's simply an ultrasound where we look at the veins. And what you're looking at with the ultrasound is to see if you have any evidence of ever having a blood clot. And also we're evaluating the valvular function of the veins with the ultrasound. So when we look at the legs, there's two venous systems in the legs. We have a deep venous system and we have a superficial venous system. So the deep system is deep down in your muscles next to your arteries. And that's where we get blood clots when we hear about DVT or blood clots. And then we have the superficial system, which is mostly the greater saphenous vein, which is a vein that runs from your groin all the way down the inner thigh and calf down to your ankle. And then the lesser saphenous vein, which runs behind your calf, and it comes up and it joins your vein right behind your knee, the popliteal vein, that's called the lesser saphenous vein. And then all the other veins that we can see underneath the skin are the superficial vein. The vein systems are actually connected at several layers up and down the leg, so that when we get rid of veins or we ablate veins or something happens, we always have another way to drain our blood because the venous system has a lot of collateral. So when we do the ultrasound, what we're looking for is treatable factors of reflux. So in our superficial system, which is the greater saphenous vein and the lesser saphenous vein, if we can show that we have blood flowing backwards, meaning that the valves are incompetent, we can actually physically see the blood going backwards, that can contribute to the swelling. And for that, we can go ahead and eliminate that vein either with a minimally invasive procedure where we melt the vein closed. The older procedures are we actually surgically cut the vein out. Nowadays, we have many more advanced procedures where we don't have to do as much surgery. We can do a lot more with catheter-based ultrasound. The other thing we're looking for is reflux in our deep system, which is those deep veins deep down in our legs next to our arteries and muscles. If we see those valves not functioning well at this current state, there's really not anything we can do to replace those veins or certainly don't close those veins because they're the main drainage of the leg. For that, then we would look to treat just with compression stockings or compression therapy. So that's an important distinction we see with the ultrasound. The third thing that we see is, are there little connection veins, we call them perforator veins, do they connect from the deep system to the superficial system, and is this in an area where there's an ulcer or a problem? Because those perforator veins can have little valves that don't work, and sometimes we'll actually close off that little perforator valve to get rid of blood flowing from the deep system into the superficial system. So everybody's a little different, and that's why we get the ultrasound and the workup to see what's going on with everybody to figure out the best treatment.
This has been a free clinic. I mean, this is the most comprehensive discussion I've ever heard, Dr. Harrington, on this topic. You've been fascinating, and I'm going to ask you if you'll stay for at least one more minute, because I think it's important that we talk about treatment. But let me remind our listeners, if you've missed any of Dr. James Harrington in this interview, please, when we upload the podcast, download the podcast and don't miss this, because he covered everything from what chronic venous insufficiency is to what causes it, signs and symptoms, the risk factors, all these important areas. And I think also our listeners want to hear you talk before we go on treatment options. What are the treatment options for chronic venous insufficiency?
So the first-line treatment options are what we call compression therapy, which are either stockings or different types of elastic wraps that will help put pressure on the legs to help push the fluid back in. And also, when we first start out with a patient, we want to look at all their medical history at work in conjunction with an internist to optimize their medical issues, because things that can contribute to swelling, such as heart failure, kidney insufficiency, low thyroid, nutritional deficits, low protein intake. These are all things that can be modified that that don't even involve the vein. So you want to make sure that your all your health issues are optimized, that there's nothing else that could be causing the swelling. We want to review patients' medications because there are a handful of medications that can cause swelling. So we want to make sure that nobody's on medications that might be making the swelling worse. Then we come to the mainstay of treatment, which is really compression therapy. So that's just basically a good way of saying wear a tight sock. So we have compression stockings that come in different strengths. They come over the counter and they're called the support socks or diabetic support socks. Or we also have compression strength stockings. So when we talk about the prescription strength stockings, they're graded in how much millimeters of mercury pressure they exert. So it's a little different number for most folks, but millimeters of mercury of pressure. So when you buy them over the counter, you're getting anywhere from 7 to 10 millimeters of mercury compression, depending on the manufacturer. When we prescribe the stockings, we start at 10 to 15 millimeters of mercury compression to 10 to 20 to 20 to 30 and then 30 to 40. So the biggest issue that we have with the compression stockings is just basically putting them on. So they can be quite tight, and a lot of people have trouble just with the dexterity and strength of putting them on, or even just the body habit is being able to bend over and pull the socks on themselves. So having a loving family member that can help out is always helpful and great with these type of patients.
And I know I have to get you out of here, but is there any limit in terms of time? A compression type stocking, is there only a certain period of time that you should wear that for, or is that not even an issue?
What we recommend is you put it on in the morning when you wake up, and you wear it all day, and then when you're ready to go to bed, you take it off and you can wear it, not wear it at night. So when you're sleeping at night, you're laying flat, so now your leg is equal with your heart, and you usually drain your fluid. So usually most people notice that in the morning when they wake up, their ankles are less swollen, and that's the reason why, because you're laying flat and you're draining your blood better.
Can this be reversed, or once you've got it, you've got it?
Unfortunately, it's usually once you got it, you got it. But you, and that's a very frustrating thing for a patient because they might not wrap their legs or wear a stocking for a day, and then boom, the leg will swell. They get very frustrated. But it's an ongoing thing where you got to constantly kind of watch your diet, keep your sodium intake down, watch your swelling, and wear the stocking. So, and especially if you're going to be out and you're on a long walk or you're going to go somewhere for a prolonged period of time, make sure you have the compression stocking.
Deborah Heart Lung Center is accepting new patients. Just go to the website, demanddeborah.org. Dr. Harrington, I always enjoy our time together. Thank you for a great program.
Thank you so much for having me, Harry. It was a great honor. Thank you.
My honor to be with you.